The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number nine with the old two finger.
Sometimes it's a full wave. Sometimes it's just the deuces.
I like it. Packed show today. And maybe an opportunity, Kelly, to talk about other things besides football, catching the world up, including perhaps ourselves, about other things that are happening in the world of sports and sports betting. Al Bernstein will join us along those lines because there's a big fight this weekend. Light heavyweight championship of the world between David El Monstro Benavides. That's the monster for those of you scoring at home.
Someone did their prep work.
I just know that part because I think Tyson gave him that nickname. Is the Mexican monster.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
If Mike Tyson gives you a nickname, yeah, that's sticking.
And then that's against Morrell. So Al Bernstein, the Hall of Fame boxing announcer, will join us a little later to talk about that. Mike Samich, Samobami, Super Bowl and beyond. Will Hill with his Super Bowl bets and beyond. We will talk Super Bowl MVP. Drew Dinsick on championship round gone by. Super Bowl 59 and the NBA as well from Drew. We got to get caught up on the whole Jimmy Butler Michigas as well. That's going on in Miami. You had a good night in the NBA, right? A lot went your way.
Oh man, yeah. One of those kind of lucky nights. We always say, hey, you're going to complain about the bad beats. Recognize when you get a little lucky. I mean, I did have the Clippers last night. They came up a couple points short, but it was. I mean, if anybody watched the end of the Lakers-Hornets game, like I ended up on the Hornets plus 5.5, Lakers won by 5. There was just a ridiculous series where Hornets were shooting free throws near the end of the game. I was going nuts because the Timberwolves looked like they were going to cover the entire time. The 7 that I was laying with that team looked like they were going to cover the entire time till about the final minute, you know, where team ahead lets up, Hawks get a couple easy buckets, I'm pulling my hair out.
Plinko.
Well, because you're like, you know, I'm worried about a point spread. These players aren't worried about a point spread. And then it's Wolves up 6, Rudy Gobert at the line.
Oh.
And there's like 30 seconds left. And I'm like, oh, gosh, Rudy, just make one. Just make one. I'll take a push and be happy, right? Clank, clank. Hawks get the ball, inbound the ball. They're down 6. Lose the ball, turn the ball over. The Wolves do the whole, we have the easy fast break, could lay it in any second. But no, we're going to pull the ball out. We're going to run the clock out because it's under 24 seconds. We can easily run this out. And the ball gets passed around enough, Gil, that it ends up in Rudy Gobert's hands again. And he goes, well, I'm just going to dunk it since I missed those two free throws.
And you covered it.
So I covered it because of Rudy Gobert dunking because out of spite there for missing free throws.
Well,
so yeah,
well,
sometimes you got to get lucky with this stuff.
Another amazing college basketball finish. I briefly alluded to this yesterday when Fezzik was here about how the Kansas-Houston game this weekend, and I really didn't even do it justice, right? The Kansas-Houston game, I talked about the finish. Houston had a 0.4% win probability. So it was, 0.04%. Actually, it was 0.4 or 0.04. Maybe it was 0.4%. Yeah, 0.4%.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Houston was down 6 in regulation. They, as part of their comeback in the last minute or so, it involved a 5-second violation and then a bad foul. And anyway, they got to overtime. They were down 6, Houston was, with less than 20 seconds left. First of all, Kansas was at the line shooting 2 up 6. I failed to mention that part, right? They missed both free throws. Good free throw shooter, too. Houston hits a 3 with about 13 seconds left. And then, of course, you know what happens. Steal, 3, splash. We go to double overtime where Houston wins. So that was an amazing finish on Saturday. And then last night, did you see the Arizona-Iowa State finish?
Yeah. I feel like everybody and their mother bet that game last night. I feel like it's the most bet college basketball game of the year.
They both were the same situation because it was a home dog, right? A very slight home dog playing against the nationally, in the case of Kansas and Houston, both teams highly ranked. This one was, Iowa State towards the top of the rankings in college basketball, a top 5 team. And but same situation with a home dog, a slight home dog. And Caleb Love, playing in his 14th year of college basketball, sinks a 55-footer to force overtime. And you know why? Because Stevie Fezzik was on Arizona, and he's the biggest luck box I've ever met in my entire life. He's a great sports bettor, and he's by far the luckiest human being I've ever met in my life. That is why Caleb Love hit that jumper, and of course, Arizona goes on to crush them in overtime.
I just like what you said about Caleb Love, because that's when I saw the highlight. I'm like, I feel like this guy's been playing college basketball for 7 years now.
We are not usually the show that talks about coaching hirings and firings in the NFL. We usually stick to the sports betting part of things. But, you know, yesterday there was an opportunity to talk, you know, because there were four introductory press conferences in the NFL yesterday. It gives us a little chance to sort of try to condense it. And I'm reminded Dave Ross, the host of By the Books, who precedes us here on the network, and I appreciate this great joke. Kelly, that Jerry Seinfeld once told Norm Macdonald, and Jerry Seinfeld prefaced the joke by saying to Norm Macdonald, Jerry Seinfeld, a Jew, Norm Macdonald, a Gentile. He prefaced it by saying to Norm Macdonald, Norm, I'm going to tell you the greatest Jewish joke ever, and you're not going to understand it. And the joke goes, two Gentile businessmen, two non-Jews meet on the street, and one says to the other, how's business? And the guy responds, great. That's the joke. Now, if you're in the tribe like I am, that is hilarious. Because, now, if you're not, you probably don't understand it. Norm Macdonald didn't understand it either. Do you understand the joke? We prepped you on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and Dave were talking about this for I don't even know how long last week.
The joke is, right, that those of us who are in the tribe, in our DNA, we like to complain about everything, right? So no two Jewish businessmen would come to each other and say, how's business? But we'd be like, well, you know, the secretary isn't doing so well. The bookkeeper stole money from me. You know, whatever it is, right? But it's both simultaneously a joke about us and a joke about you, because it's like, of course you guys wouldn't get it because everything is peachy keen. And I would just say maybe just a shade below complete authenticity and in the response. And so it's a joke on both sides. And that's how the NFL head coaching hiring press conferences seemed to me yesterday. Can we start with Dallas and Brian Schottenheimer? He had this to say.
We're going to win. And we're going to win a championship. Otherwise, why are we doing it?
Okay, that was also buttressed by Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, who, of course, is in Dallas front office and probably own the team one day, saying, our drought, using air quotes. Well, you haven't reached the NFC Championship since after the 1995 season when you won the Super Bowl. That's the longest streak not being a championship game in the entire NFC, now that Washington got to it this year. And so I just find Brian Schottenheimer, who last week when I was on the show, I said, if they end up hiring Brian Schottenheimer, what did I say? This is basically Jerry Jones saying to the Dallas Cowboy fan base, yeah, I don't care anymore. We're just going to ride it through. It's all about me. And I'm going to put anybody I want as a head coach. And that's kind of the message it sent. For Brian Schottenheimer to come out there and be like, yeah, we're going to win the championship. Otherwise, why are we doing it? You're not. You're just not. Stop it.
We've gotten so far past the day of being able to say stuff like this and people not have the immediate reaction of like, all right, bro. Sure, bro. You got it.
How's business? Great. This is, you know, look, have people overcome press conferences before? Dan Campbell did with biting the knees. It's gone pretty well for him. Let's just say Jim Zorn and the Maroon and Black, when he was hired by Washington, didn't go over so well, and we knew it was doomed from the beginning. This is Aaron Glenn being introduced as the New York Jets' new head coach.
Players that's here now, put your seatbelts on and get ready for the ride. Listen, there are going to be some challenges. But with challenges becomes opportunity, gets opportunity. But here's what I do know. We're the freaking New York Jets, so we're built for this.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are, Aaron Glenn.
Listen, I want this job. I interviewed for a number of them, but I wanted this job.
Yeah, you're the freaking New York Jets, all right. We're built for this blank. Jets have the longest playoff drought in the NFL, 14 seasons. What are you built for?
They're built for the suffering.
Is there anybody who comes out of that Cowboys press conference and that Jets press conference thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, he's right. We are the Dallas Cowboys and we are playing for a championship. We are the New York Jets. We're the freaking New York Jets.
I took that very differently from Aaron Glenn. For Aaron Glenn, it was the look. This is going to be tough. We've been through a lot as a franchise, so we're gonna be okay because of that.
And now,
the Cowboys is just straight delusional.
And now, well,
that's just straight delusional.
I find them both delusional. And now, perhaps Captain Delusion, Liam Cohen being hired as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
How do we make Trevor Lawrence and this offense as dynamic and explosive as we can be? Right? We've got to build it around him as well, right? We've got to make every part of this about improvement. And he will be a part of that process. He's earned that right. I cannot respect his toughness and mentality and work ethic more than I do already from afar. And this will all be about Trevor right now.
Well, more famously, what Liam did yesterday is he said, you ready? Quote, Duval.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just how he started it, the press conference. I have no idea.
Duval. It was great. It was awesome. By the way, they're 5-18, their last 23, tied for the worst record in the NFL since week 13 of 2023. He's gone from the Rams to Kentucky to the Rams to Kentucky, now to Jacksonville, only because Trent Baalke resigned. And finally, Pete Carroll with the Las Vegas Raiders.
With our guys, I know that we have a good draw for people from out of town. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, Mark, settle down a little bit.
That's a joke about Mark Davis, the owner, when in fact it was Marshawn Lynch who screamed Raiders, interrupting Pete Carroll's press conference. Until you have a quarterback, you're nothing. And oh, by the way, Raiders, you have the second worst win percentage in the NFL over the last 20 seasons, 367, since getting to the Super Bowl after the 2002 season with our own Rich Gannon. You haven't won a single playoff game and have only been to the playoffs twice. You have no quarterback.
What is the saddest situation of all those teams?
Well, it's always going to be Jacksonville, but they're all sad. Again, how's business? It's great. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the NBA and NFL next. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Want a bit smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now, you can check out Visa Pro articles like Visa's Pro Super Bowl Preview. That's Visa's Super Bowl Preview. Greg Peterson has the college basketball best bets and a Circa Super Bowl Squares explanation guide. How about that? Later today, you can check out Zach Cohen's best NBA props and picks, Jonathan Davis's best NHL player props and bets, and Lou Finicaro's UFC Fight Night 250 preview. To get access to all the articles on VSiN.com right now, you can sign up for $59 off an annual subscription with promo code ANG. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. This is from, let's see, Bruce Dobigan. Your Seinfeld joke reminds me of the one my Jewish friend told me about, the old Jewish guy who's lying on the road after being hit by a car. A concerned passerby kneels by him and says, "Are you okay?" To which the old guy says, "I'm comfortable." Ryan Thompson, appreciate Gil censoring himself in the first segment by saying blank. I guess he only goes blue after hours on the Megapod. Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Hoops by Hoots, breaking. Liam Cohen has now replaced Scott Hansen on NFL Red Zone after his rendition of Duval. I can't even do it. It was so bad. Had producers falling head over heels in love with him. Mark Geiger, how's business from the Oy Vey department with these new coaches? Number of Super Bowl wins next 5 years. Zero is at -1800, he says. Wow. Pete is a touch older than yours truly, who has difficulty getting out of bed, and it goes downhill from there. Yo, Boomer, best of luck to you. Well, Pete Carroll's going to be 74 September 15th. We should all aspire to have his energy at his age.
Yeah.
That much I will not take away from him. 3JackH3131, setting a reminder to bet all alt-under season win totals for Cowboys, Jags, Raiders, and the freaking New York Jets. The Raiders could at least be fun to watch, though, waiting for Pete to announce Marshawn as an assistant coach. D-Gen Southern Gent answering the question that you asked me. I'll tell you what the saddest situation of all those is, Kelly. It's the Cowboys, and it ain't even close, he says. A delusional owner that continues to rake in profits while his loyal but delusional fan base continues to support an abysmal product. Also, my wife's a Cowboys diehard.
Yeah.
He adds at the end.
I think it's probably the Cowboys too, because of a lot of that. And it's, I don't, like, what were Jerry's comments too at the press conference? Of like, he has no experience. Like, he has none at all. Like, this is the ultimate leap of faith. It's like, wait, what? Are you like bragging about this?
That sounds like
you're
was.
Bragging about hiring a guy that's like not qualified for the job. Is that what you're saying?
Like I said, we're not usually the show that talks about hirings and firings, but this was such a royal flush of crapitude yesterday that you almost had to.
I believe in Aaron Glenn. I do. But the problem is, like, that Jets roster. I mean, this is going to take, you're going to have to overhaul this probably three times before you're even at a place to start again with the New York Jets.
Aaron Glenn, who would not answer questions about Aaron Rodgers either. Is he going to be your starter? Yeah, he avoided that the whole
time. I mean, reading between the lines, it sure sounded like that's going to be a large amount of ugly conversations ahead this offseason.
Drew Dinsick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter, whale_capper, the host of not one but two podcasts, The Deep Dive, Dinsick Classic with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, pardon me, could be called The Edge, that'd be even cooler, with Jay Croucher. Drew Dinsick now joins us. How you doing, man?
Great, yeah, we'll take you to the edge. We'll take you past it. The commentary was great. I could have listened to that for another 5 minutes. the coaching cycle. Yeah, we woke up and the NFL is now Major League Baseball. There's haves and have nots, and it's about quarterback and the owners that are in charge of these teams that are trying to find their feet. It feels like this is going to, you know, we're going to be doing this again, you know, change half of the teams at the bottom to the teams that we're making jokes about next year. And then the next, you know, the following season, it'll be these same teams again. It feels like I'm kind of taken aback by the degree of, you know, just the lack of vision, the lack of any ability to develop coaching talent at these NFL, you know, opportunities. It seems crazy to me that we're recycling some of these names.
It was a comedy show yesterday. It sure was.
Where's Deion? I'm still just blown away by this. If you had asked me 2 months ago, should Deion Sanders be an NFL head coach? I'd be like, man, I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to work out. But compared to some of these other like names that are getting signed.
I was convinced Jerry Jones was waiting for Kellen Moore, who he would have been able to interview had the Eagles won or lost this past week. Kellen Moore was available for the interview by rule. But no, he's like, nah, we'll just go with this guy.
We'll go with that guy.
And if his name was not Schottenheimer, right?
Right.
Would he even be, would it even be that? I don't know. I don't know that anyone was banging down Brian Schottenheimer's door for interviews. So,
Shanahan's kid is doing well. Maybe Schottenheimer's kid will be good.
Absolutely. It's possible. You're absolutely right. Okay. By the way, let's just ask you the question. Of those four that hired head coaches yesterday, which is the saddest situation?
Ooh. It's probably the Raiders and
everybody's Pete got a Carroll. Different answer. Yeah.
So you step way back and you're like, are the Raiders the type of team that could have afforded to take a swing on a young unknown to try to, you know, kind of rescue what's going on there? And you look at the roster and you're like, well, that wasn't going to work. And so getting a guy who has some, has some experience and can build a culture and all that, that idea makes sense. But if that's the way they needed to go, they should have at least kicked the tires on are there any coaches at existing spots that are kind of wearing out their welcome, like a McDermott or a Tomlin, right? Like anyone who we could poach who is we know to have at least still have close to a fastball in today's NFL. And instead they went with Pete Carroll, and like, I don't want to get super weird, but like Pete Carroll is known for a very laissez-faire type of program that he likes to build. And now you're bringing young men into the desert and you're going to put them in a Pete Carroll type of system. It's a little oil and water, in my opinion, as far as building a culture. I think ultimately all of these floundering franchises, the only thing that matters is find your Jaden Daniels.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Get the right quarterback, and 20 years of sins get wiped away in one season. Right. That's all it takes. Yeah. Now this year, is anyone who is drafting a quarterback going to find that guy? Probably not, but you never know. And I think the general kind of, the lack of anything that constitutes kind of good long-term building is really the thing that makes me the most frustrated here. Cause there was a lot of good football this year, but it was the same. It was the teams that we knew were going to be good and that have established quarterbacks and, were playing each other, and it was rare. And there was a lot of bad football this year, and sort of the gulf between the good and the bad has never been broader. It's pretty sobering. And, you know, I think the dunking on Jerry Jones and Schottenheimer is extremely warranted. But in that same breath, like, that's the one kind of hire that I think probably has short term success just because of how talented that roster is. And all of those guys, if they're healthy next year, like, that's a team that's going to be knocking on the door of the playoffs, if not clearly in. So, yeah, I mean, they have the best player, they have the best defensive player in football. And Micah Parsons, if he plays 17 games, like, the Cowboys are going to be good regardless of how, you know, whatever nonsense Schottenheimer's doing coordinating offense there. So, you know, it's a weird time.
The increasing chasm between the haves and the have-nots. One show has been saying that about sports for a few years now. I used to say it about baseball all the time. And you're right, it is about football. What about the pinnacle of the NFL, the Chiefs and the Eagles in Super Bowl 59, with the Chiefs 1.5-point favorites at the moment. We'll see what happens over the next 12 days. Did you make a bet already?
I did. And funny enough, I pulled up my preseason numbers just out of curiosity. And I would have made the Chiefs 1.39-point favorites on a neutral against the Eagles preseason. So we've learned nothing. we are back to kind of exactly what we knew. There was a gap between these guys and the Chiefs were better, I guess. As I kind of look at the game, what is hidden in sort of the awe of Mahomes here again is that the Chiefs defense is, I think, a little smoke and mirrors right now. They succeeded certainly against CJ Stroud and the Texans by ramping up the pressure when the moment was right. That was brilliant. They succeeded against the Bills, I think, largely because the Bills sort of just kind of lost their cool. Allen in particular, I didn't think played a good game at all. And, you know, Brady could have tacked into more Cook, and it would have been more successful, I think. And I know it was a close victory, but I don't think the score really belied how big the gap was there. The run defense for the Chiefs got pretty exposed now 2 weeks in a row. And now they're taking on Saquon Barkley. I think that there is a very real world where this is just the Barkley show and he runs away with MVP. And this is his kind of Hall of Fame moment after not going for the record in week 18. So I played some Eagles money line plus 116. I think it's a pretty weak angle. I think pretty much this market looks exactly, you know, pretty correct. And really, it just comes down to if the Chiefs run defense is if that's the same unit we saw against the Bills and the Texans, then the Eagles are going to be able to put some serious pain on them on the ground.
I like the honesty, though. It's a pretty weak angle, but here you go. Here's my bet. Eagles on the money line for Drew Dinsick. More on the Super Bowl, NBA, Australian Open thoughts. Drew Dinsick joining us on a numbers game right here at VSiN.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready to take your tailgate to the next level? You got to try Sewell's barbecue sauce. Born from a backyard cookout in a mason jar of unforgettable flavors, Sewell's has become a Southern favorite, delighting taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas. From smoky ribs and mouth-watering wings to the perfect backyard burger, man, Sewell's turns every bite into a flavor-packed experience. Order now at sewellsbarbecuesauce.com. That's SewellsBBQSauce.com. Flavor this good, it's just a click away. By the way, the reason I don't spell sauce is because in the read it just tells me not to spell sauce, which is why I think it's pretty amusing. don't spell sauce, people know how to spell it. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. This is from C Spackler at Expert. He says, enjoying the crappitude replays and confusing ethnic humor today, we need more cowbell. I enjoyed it quite myself. Rick Ollier, has Pete Carroll moved into your building yet, and if so, have you introduced him to Delicious? Hashtag let's ride. Shooter McGamlin. Gil, I was hoping Fezzik would have touched on this yesterday, but I would love to hear yours and Drew's opinion on going for two down by five. I thought the Bills should have went for it even before the penalty. The guys I was watching with did not. The Bills down five. Was that the 21-16? Was that the 21-16? I'm trying to think what the score was, and where the penalty put them at the 1 yard line, if I'm not mistaken. And then they went. Yeah, I think when you go to the 1 yard line, if I'm thinking about the right thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
absolutely go for it at that point.
Especially when you have a Josh Allen on your team.
But as Tony Romo, I make fun of Tony Romo a lot with all of his comments. I think we'll probably go for it here, Jim, on the 4th and 5 at the end. Yeah, no, Tony, we get it. He was all over the scouting report that the Chiefs were all over the fact that Josh Allen on the sneak goes over left guard. So shout out to Romo on that. Dave Ross, who hosts the show before us by the books, rushed back to my car to listen to Gil and Kelly talk Dallas Cowboys. Had no idea Gil would use this classic joke to describe the Cowboys coaching sitch, but man, did he nail this joke. Jerry Seinfeld, it still kills me that you told Norm he wouldn't get the joke. Drew Dinsick joins us once again to discuss multiple sports. Real quick before we move on, anything else in Super Bowl 59 that you're, let's say, anticipating with props that you're ready to pounce on if it comes up a certain way? Anything?
Yeah,
like
I mean, I think if you're not trying to get $100,000 down on a side and you just want to bet, I personally think Eagles money line is highly correlated with Barkley MVP. I found some 3-1 out there yesterday. I think there is a very, very high likelihood that if the game state comes about that allows the Eagles to get this across the line, it's because Barkley has a couple of home run plays. And, you know, he specifically is the type of player that is boom or bust to the degree that it makes sense to swing in this market. Like if he busts, the Eagles are not winning. And yeah. So forget about any of the other names that are Eagles. And if he booms, then he becomes the easiest decision if the Eagles win. So, you have 250 up right now. I think fair price is closer to 180 in my opinion. And I think he makes up something like 75 to 80% of the equity for the Eagles.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes, the short shot to win Super Bowl MVP, plus 105, followed by Saquon at plus 250, the shortest Eagle on the board. Mahomes, by the way, in addition to the Chiefs trying to become the first team to win three consecutive Super Bowls in the Super Bowl era, Mahomes trying to become the first player to win three consecutive Super Bowl MVP trophies as well. Only three have won back-to-backs. Bradshaw, number two, oh no, excuse me, Bart Starr, Terry Bradshaw, and Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes trying to be the first to do three in a row. Not Brady, not Montana, none of those guys won two.
Oh man, all that does is make me nervous. Like, is there are we going to have a fatigue or something from Mahomes voting or something that we're going to look for any other reason to find another chief to give it to if they win?
The only reason Drew is patiently waiting. But the only reason I don't do the fatigue thing during the Super Bowl is because they're voting on it on the fly. And so because they're voting it on the fly, I don't think they process.
They should have less time to think about stuff like
that.
Yeah,
like, I don't
want
to give
it
to Mahomes, right?
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And who was the running back? Was it Damian Williams, Drew, that one year where like Mahomes had no business winning it and they gave it to him anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, that was his crowning, you know, that was his he's arrived moment. I remember betting a lot live market on MVP Mahomes that year. As they were down 11, because at that point it's the same sort of calculus, right? Like either the Chiefs just lose this game or Mahomes brings them back. And at which point, like, he's clearly the MVP, and the money line and the Mahomes MVP were disconnected because he had been playing poorly to that point. I would say the same thing applies in this game regardless, which is if you like the Chiefs in this game and you want skin in the MVP market, I would just wait for a time in the game where the Chiefs are losing. The Chiefs play close games. I don't know if you've watched the Chiefs much, but they do not run away and hide when they're playing good teams. They tend to try to extract the end, you know, they pick up the nickels. And they just are cool enough and calm enough to, be the team that is executing at the highest level at the end of the games. Like when the fourth and five was incomplete to Kincaid, which again was an amazing play by Allen. I cannot believe he saw him. Can't believe he got the ball in his area code. I don't blame Kincaid for dropping it. I thought that was a 50-50 ball. That ball hits the ground and you're like, oh, yeah, the game's over. Like the chances that the Chiefs don't have the plays in the playbook to get the first downs they need to put this thing away with kneel downs, I think is very low. And, you know, like if you have that, you know, that type of if you have that type of bag in your game, then, it becomes, you know, you win these types of games. And so I guess I would look for, I would be happy to write Mahomes MVP tickets pregame if I was a bookmaker at plus 105. I think there is certainly a world where there's a fatigue vote. If it's, you know, if there is a reason to give it to someone else, I think they will. But I also think that I will be watching the market live, seeing if there's an opportunity where the Eagles are, because, you know, there was times even in the third quarter against the Commanders where the Commanders defense was like clearly gassed, nothing left. And still it was like, well, Daniels is out here doing, he's making magic. Like, this might get sweaty. I can't believe that this might get sweaty. And the Rams came back from, you know, when in that game looked like it was absolutely done, almost won. And so I don't know that I trust the Eagles in put this thing away mode defense wise. And so if there's a 2-score lead here for the Eagles at any point, I'll definitely be playing some Mahomes MVP.
Real quick, you said you're taking the Eagles on the money line. Fezzik was in here. He's a big proponent because of the postseason overtime rules, that if you're taking the dog, you should take the points. And if you're taking the favorite, you should take the money line because of the likelihood of a 1-point result in overtime. Do you buy into that at all?
It's a really, really, really good point. But I,
okay.
Yeah. If it gets to overtime, it kind of feels like if that is the game state we're in, I don't think the Eagles are winning, and I don't know that it's because they score a touchdown, get a extra point, and then give up a touchdown and a two.
Yeah.
It's because they just, you know, they puddle themselves and the Chiefs are cool, calm, and collected and score a touchdown going away.
He said puddle themselves.
I hadn't heard that one before. I like it.
All right, real quick, rapid fire. What do you have in the NBA tonight, sir?
Big night for fatigue angle. And actually big month for fatigue angle. The NBA has been weird this year, Gil. I got absolutely crushed in December. And I blame the NBA Cup for kind of completely, churning the schedule. But the extra rest that was afforded all those teams in December has come back to haunt them as they have the compressed schedule here in January. And so the teams with the fatigue advantage have just been printing so far. It has been a delightful month betting the NBA. I would say that the obvious angles tonight are the Sixers. That is down to 2. I got in. Oh, no, so that's 4. I think there's a decent chance a bunch of Lakers sit. Most notably, Anthony Davis and LeBron James. This could flip to Philly favorite, but either way, I think Philly covers. No Embiid, no Paul George, but Maxey and company have been playing competitive basketball lately. So Philly stays inside the number, in my opinion. I think Portland stays inside the number against Milwaukee. I think Golden State chooses their number against Utah. 12 is not enough. And then I have nothing for Houston, Atlanta. That one looks fun.
All right. And then Australian Open postscript. Give it to us.
Madison Keys will be the number one takeaway from this entire tennis season after what happened at the Australian Open. I kind of had lost any kind of belief that in her age 30 season, she was going to really threaten to take a title at a slam. I knew that a deep run was possible considering that she has a specific game at this level that is just extremely high ceiling. The fact that she was able to rein that game in the absolute key moments, particularly against in the third set against Iga, was unbelievable. I could not believe that she broke back instead of, you know, walking that out 7-5 and saying, well, I got it to the semifinal. That's cool. No, she fought back and she was elite service in that tiebreak as well. Still can't believe it. And then her final performance against Sabalenka was just phenomenal. She, like, the tactical aspects of it, the execution, it was all just 10 out of 10. Amazing tennis. And her return on championship point that ultimately won it was something that I will remember specifically from this Australian Open. It was so good. And it caught Sabalenka. Like, she literally was like, how did she do that? And the point was over. The tournament was over. It was pretty special stuff.
Sabalenka handled it well, didn't she? As always.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. As always. And then Sasha.
She's a competitor, man.
Yeah. She is. She wears her feelings on her sleeve. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And then Sasha Zverev just with a absolutely horrible performance in the final. Drew, always appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
All right, best luck, guys.
Drew Densing, everybody, at @whale_capper. We'll come back, a little more MVP talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN, the sports betting network, now live 24/7 on Sirius XM channel 158. Have you heard? Whether you're at home, on the road, or on the go, now there's more ways than ever to tune into VSiN. Stream us live on VSiN.com, the VSiN Watch app, YouTube TV, iHeartRadio, Fire TV, Roku, and now Sirius XM, channel 158. Look at that. No excuses anymore, people.
Right.
My buddies are like, how do I listen to you? For like years, I was like, we're on YouTube TV. They're like, well, give me blank. We're on iHeartRadio.
If you happen to know what your local iHeart sports station
that's
is.
That's right. Yeah. But now SiriusXM 158, they get it. They get it. Very good. Before we get to the MVP talk again, can I ask you a couple NBA questions, sir? Because you are Mr. NBA. No, you're not. But you're close to being Mr. NBA. Amen Thompson and the Rockets.
Yep.
Who have this dramatic win against the Celtics last night. Amen Thompson.
That was the one I left out of the first segment, by the way. It was on the Rockets, too.
Oh, yeah.
Catching 5.5. But you know what we say about overtime and underdogs. So
yeah.
Hitting the game-winning buzzer beater was big.
A Eurostep fade job to beat the Celtics.
He's amazing. Both the Thompson brothers are.
How do you pronounce it? Asar is the other one?
Yeah.
Asar?
Yeah.
Asar like, Thompson. As soon plays as for the Pistons. Yeah.
As soon as they dial in their jump shots, like, watch out. Because these guys are both athletic monsters, and on the defensive side are just incredible.
Amen dropped 33 last night. Dylan Brooks, I think, had 36 in the Rockets' win.
He's like 10 for 16 from three.
10
Dylan
for
Brooks.
15, I believe. Yeah,
that's
something
crazy,
like that.
Man.
The question is, are the Rockets a legitimate contender to win, forget the NBA title for a second, let's just say the conference. Let's start there.
Okay, so
legitimate meaning, can they get to the conference title and have a puncher's chance?
Yeah, yes, they are. They are that good defensively. They are a very good defensive team. Ime Udoka, I still think, is one of the better head coaches in the NBA.
That was my next question. Yeah. Is he the coach of the year favorite to you?
No. The coaching job's done in Cleveland and Detroit, I think, would start there. But Ime Udoka taking a team from that mediocrity level or pretty good to legit contender in the Western Conference like we're talking about is a very big deal. And I think last night that was on full display, especially with what that game meant to Ime in Boston.
If he was Ime Ubidlin and didn't have his past off the court stuff, would he be your coach of the year?
No.
Would voters be more likely to vote him coach of the year is what I guess I'm asking.
I think their bigger jump would have come last year. I think that would have been more applicable to for the conversation a year ago. What Kenny Atkinson's doing in Cleveland and bringing that Cavs team to a next level, he's the favorite and for good reason.
Especially because he was like coveted for so long.
But I know where you're getting at. Is Ime Udoka in the top third of coaches that I trust in this league? Without a doubt, he's probably a top five coach from that perspective.
Here's my other question, and I think this goes along the lines of what we started with on the show, which is this gives us a chance to sort of catch up on things. So there's a lot of people, because we're so football immersed, we sort of hear other things in other sports, but we don't really get to the nitty gritty of it. This Jimmy Butler stuff in Miami. So Jimmy Butler has a history. His NBA career is just as great as he is. Playoff Jimmy, of course, being the most famous thing about Jimmy Butler. Taking two teams, I believe, to the NBA championship, if I'm not mistaken. It also has been marred, if I can use that word, by quick exits, quick adversarial exits from the teams he's played for, beginning with the Chicago Bulls, who he started his career with. Then he played like just over a season with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He played, 50-some games with the Philadelphia 76ers. They were a good 50-some games. But the Sixers broke up my favorite Sixers iteration of all. Right. That team that had the shooters, Covington was traded for him, Dario Saric, all these guys. So he plays very little in Philly. That was the Raptors team that ended up winning the title that beat them in the playoffs. And then he goes, he plays in Miami. Now, this is the perfect marriage, right? Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat way, if you will. Perfect brand symmetry right there. Or not symmetry, but just sort of it coalesces beautifully. And now he's desperate to get out of Miami. He's been suspended not once, not twice, but now three times. The latest for just walking out of practice yesterday when he found out, or the day before when he found out he wasn't going to start.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he become so sour, and where does he end up?
Yeah, I think you're dealing with, I think the biggest part of this story is that you're dealing with two massive, massive egos with him and Pat Riley. Whenever we talked about Jimmy Butler, he's an incredible player. What he does effort-wise on the court, off the court, where you hear teammates speak about him, he's always been a respected guy from the teammate side of things, but he's known to lash out. He's a guy that
everywhere
he's been, he's going to have critiques along the way. He's going to be vocal about them. And what we've seen, I feel like part of the blowback that I've heard as an NBA guy, the anti-NBA stance for so many years now has been these stars get whatever they want and it's ridiculous.
And he will.
And Pat Riley has been sitting up there for months now in the front office saying, I am not giving Jimmy Butler whatever he wants unless we're going to get fair return on the value of him as a player. And right now, the NBA landscape, there is not really fair value for the return on Jimmy Butler. In my opinion, I think there's also, this is how I jokingly talk about the Jimmy Butler situation. It's also from the other team's perspectives out there that might be interested.
Of course, they know all this stuff about him.
Okay, all the past, and then it's, hey, Gil, I got a 35-year-old wing player that can't shoot a three. Are you interested? Like, it's,
yeah, but then there's the playoff Jimmy.
Then there's playoff Jimmy. So you have to sell a team on playoff Jimmy. And right now it just looks like the Bulls, Suns, and Heat might all just trade each other. They're disgruntled players and
Bulls, Suns, and Heat. Well, the thing is he wants out. He will get out. He will succeed in that way. He's so, going to get traded. The Heat are actively trying to trade him. Now, will he end up in Phoenix where he really wants to go? The answer to that might be no, because the Suns' contracts with these players are terrible. They're awful. The worst contracts in the league. So Pat Riley may make his stand on that at least.
And Bradley Beal's going to be the guy who holds a lot of this stuff up because he has the no trade clause. Phoenix wants to get rid of him, but he has a no trade clause, so he gets to pick basically where he goes.
Where do you think Butler ends up? And does it and is there an answer to this question where it moves the needle? On championship.
He wants Phoenix so bad. So I think Phoenix, and considering Phoenix wants to get rid of Beal, I think that in all likelihood it does. He does end up there. But like, okay, we got this second apron stuff going on with the NBA salary cap. Now that is a big deal too, Gil, because literally these teams are just restricted more on how to make these trades. So I am not completely sold that Jimmy Butler will be gone. Because I think Pat Riley is petty enough, too, that he will say, I'm going to keep suspending you until you show up and be a real basketball player.
Both children.
They're both children, and guess what? Eric Spoelstra, the best coach in the NBA, is getting caught right in the middle of this and having to walk the company line, and I don't really think that's fair, and I think it's starting to look really bad for the Miami Heat culture that we've talked about for so long, and it's impossible for these players not to be distracted when you're on the Heat. Well, I think if you're Pat Riley, you need to get Jimmy Butler, get rid of him, because you need to start refocusing on realizing.
Of course, you do.
What
you
your
have
team
to get rid of him because player the, he's created a situation where you can't keep him. And the truest thing you said, Kelly, was this is why people hate the NBA.
And that's exactly why. I mean, you got to rebuild at some point. Though you still have good pieces like with Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, but Pat Riley's too stubborn to realize that you are a rebuilding team.
Is he going to end up somewhere that's going to make a difference in the playoffs? That's the only thing that matters here, and we'll find out. We'll all find out together. If you can get ahead of that, great. But I don't know that we can.
Well, I'd like to see him on Memphis.
By the way, Memphis?
I think that would be interesting.
By the way, we brought this up with Drew, Super Bowl 59 MVP, where Patrick Mahomes is going for his third in a row, an unprecedented third in a row. He's the short shot. Saquon is the short shot for the Philadelphia Eagles at plus 250. There you see it on the screen. Mahomes plus 105, Saquon plus 250. Then it's Hurts, who probably would have been the Super Bowl MVP 2 years ago had the Eagles pulled that out against the Chiefs. He's 3-1. And then everybody else is 20-1 or longer, beginning with Travis Kelce. Is there a bet here for you?
I think Drew broke it down very well. I hadn't really thought about the Mahomes voter fatigue factor because I was actually surprised.
I don't think that's a thing.
Okay, so I think if you like the Chiefs and you think like Gil, then Patrick Mahomes is the obvious correlated bet in this market.
Well, I always ask it this way. What would happen? I know some people, I think Feliga came on and said Jalen Carter 70-1. Again, there's only four defensive players that have won the MVP since the turn of the century. It really has to go a specific way for that to happen. And we've seen, again, Mahomes win the MVP when he didn't necessarily deserve it, right? Yeah. Or wasn't the most deserving candidate. Let's put it that way. I shouldn't say it the former way. What is the – who? Give me the scenario was the most likely. It's that Matt Brown-Travis Kelce thing from the divisional round, right, where Mahomes threw for 177 yards and a touchdown. Kelce got 117 of those and the touchdown. Mm-hmm. Would Kelce get the MVP in that scenario? And if the answer to that is – you know, and you know, you're still equivocating on that, and you don't really know if Kelce would get the MVP even in that scenario, then you have to bet Mahomes if you're backing the Chiefs. The Drew point is the better one, though, with the fact that Saquon's giving you much more bang for your buck. it's a better market to bet the Eagles by proxy than it is the Eagles as a than it is the Chiefs as a result of that.
Yeah, I thought he had a great point on that. What are the chances the Eagles win this game, right? And Barkley doesn't have a big game.
Yeah,
it's pretty slim.
I think it's a pretty straightforward market, no matter how you try to finagle it in your head otherwise. Will Hill, all his bets, Super Bowl 59 and beyond, next.